This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And there's no reason why these West African countries cannot come together and form their own currency unit that is controlled by themselves and not from by the French treasury. And so I think that the issue here is to cooperate with each other and not continue to look outside the continent for development.
That's John Makum Mambaku, professor of economics at Weber State University, talking about France controlling the currencies in its former colonies. Details coming up. Also, Sudan's army chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan's recent trip from Khartoum appeared to reflect a shift in the conflict there, and a campaign in Africa to use beans as the answer to food insecurity begins next week. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. After 60 years of independence, the citizens of several former French colonies in Africa still are not able to fully participate in their own governance systems or their economies. John Makum Mbaku is a Brady Presidential Distinguished Professor of Economics and John S. Hinckley Fellow at Weber State University in the U.S. state of Utah. He also is a non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. In our conversation, he starts by describing the source of the frustration many citizens in the former French colonies feel.
There are several issues. The most important, extreme poverty, the lack of governance institutions that allow people to take control of their lives, go to school and get a good education, participate in the economy. And so there's been a lot of frustration because many people in these countries feel that after more than 60 years of independence, they still are not able to develop themselves. They are still not able to participate in their own governance systems or in their own economies. And so many young people especially are frustrated because of joblessness, poor healthcare, a bad infrastructure, and the various problems that make it very difficult for them to earn a living. This is the source. In my opinion, this is a major source of the frustration and the fact that these people see themselves as being controlled by foreigners.
What is the solution then?
I think the solution is for these countries to develop institutions that can allow local people to have control over their lives, that can allow these countries to take control of the resources that they have so that they can make it possible for there to become the kind of economic activities that will allow poor people to get out of poverty, to prevent the economies from being controlled by foreign interests, and to basically eliminate corruption, minimize religious extremism, and all the other problems that create a lot of issues regarding peace and security so that people can actually develop themselves. And one way to do so is for countries like Niger to start looking at regional cooperation. I really believe that West African countries have the opportunity to get together as a group and develop their economies in such a way that they can have more control over domestic policy and be able to, for example, form their own currency and not have to depend on France as they have done during the last several years to guarantee a currency for them. There is no reason why Niger cannot cooperate with Nigeria next door and other countries in the region and have the opportunity to develop their economies themselves and not continue to allow themselves to be exploited by external sources.
And Professor, have France and other Western powers contributed to some of these problems?
Yes, these Western countries have done so since the colonial period. There is no question about it. And with respect to the Francophone countries, the French signed agreements back in 1958 with the Francophone countries. These agreements that were supposed, so-called accords, that were supposed to govern post-independence relationships between France and its former colonies, those agreements put into place structures that have made it very difficult for these countries to develop. And one of those agreements provided for the CFA franc, which is guaranteed by the French Treasury, and that incorporation into the French system has made it very difficult for these countries to have independent monetary policy. My suggestion is that those agreements have to be revisited or thrown away completely so that these countries can have an opportunity to begin to look at development from a regional perspective. There is no reason why Cameroon cannot trade more with Nigeria than it does with France and Europe. And there's no reason why these West African countries cannot come together and form their own currency unit that is controlled by themselves and not from by the French treasury. And so I think that the issue here is for these countries to take control of themselves and begin to develop institutions that would allow them to cooperate with each other and not continue to look outside the continent for development. And I think this is doable. It's not that difficult to restructure the system and get away from the colonially imposed post-independence structures that have continued to inhibit development within the continent.
John Mukum Mbaku is a Brady Presidential Distinguished Professor of Economics and a Senior Fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. He talked to me from the U.S. state of Utah. EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell says the military coup in Gabon cannot be compared to the crisis in Niger, arguing that officers intervened after ousted President Ali Bongo won an unfair election. David Monda, professor of political science at City, New York University, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi why the European position isn't equating the two coups and why there's popular support for takeover in Gabon.
I think two things. One, that the election was far from free and fair. I think, quite frankly, there was a lot of questions about the legitimacy, the openness, and the fairness of the election. But I think even historically, elections in Gabon have not really been fair. They haven't been free. And there's been a lot of questions asked about the legitimacy of the results of many elections that have occurred in Gabon. But the other question that you address is this whole issue of why does the population then seem to support military takeover, because there's no alternate exit ramp when you have these authoritarian regimes, these corrupt kleptocrats that want to remain in power by hook or crook. There's no democratic process that can exit crisis within the state. And that is why you then have the military as the most organized institution outside of the government that can then replace existing regimes. So this is why I think individuals in Gabon are fed up. They're tired of the corruption. They're tired of the special interests. They're tired of their country being run as a family enterprise. And I think this is where the military has stepped in. What's going to be interesting is what does the military do from now going forward? Will they transition into a more democratic regime? Will they allow free and fair elections to bring in a civilian government? Or will we find a situation like what's happened in Sudan, where you have factions within the military that will then start to jostle and fight for power? Because we have to understand, you cannot look at the Gabon context outside of a regional context. Let's remember, Bongo has very close ties, for example, with the Congo, with Denis Sassou Nguesso. So there's also a regional context in terms of the stability of the country. But of course, you have the other issue of where does France lie within this whole context? Does France support the coup, or does France also have its interest with the previous regime, which has been toppled? I think that's going to become more clear in the days going forward.
Generally speaking, how do you think France would do to face the sequence of military coups in its former colonies in Africa?
France has, particularly since the late 90s, has tended to want to focus more on its continental integration within the European Union, and it's tended to almost abandon its former colonies. But I think there's been a broader awakening within the last 5-10 years within Francophone Africa, that this legacy of French control is really not in the best interest of many of these Francophone countries. But I think the other interesting point I should make here is that the coup plotters, actually in their statement, it addressed Washington because they made their initial statement in English. And that's also very interesting to hear that they were speaking in English. It seems that they were articulating a message to Washington to say, United States, we have taken over power in Gabon and we need your support. So it's also going to be very interesting for the Biden administration. Where does the U.S. see its hand within the politics of Gabon? Because the U.S. is also an ally with the French. When Biden talks about a rules-based international order and democracy and freedom for the world, will the Biden administration support a military takeover that's then in place to remove an illegitimate regime that's become exploitative and repressive to the people of Gabon? Or will the Biden administration in cahoots with the French decide that they want to remove this military regime and they want the Bongo dynasty to continue? I think that'll be a huge dilemma for the Bidens, but also for France. Where will France decide that its legacy will be in these former Francophone countries? We know historically the French have used their rapid deployment forces to intervene militarily in many of its former colonies. Will France take the initiative and intervene militarily in Gabon? Or is this a new era when the Macron regime will say that democratic structures need to be in place in Gabon, and whether we have that transition through the military or through other means, that France will stand out? So I think a lot of these external powers, the US and France, will have a very interesting dilemma with how to deal with this new military regime in Gabon going forward.
That was David Monda, professor of political science at City New York University, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy. Zimbabwe's main opposition party is calling for nationwide protests and a return and a rerun of elections that it said fraudulently handed President Emmerson Mnangagwa a second term in office. The Citizens Coalition for Change, CCC, has accused the ruling ZANU-PF party of suppressing the vote in areas where CCC does well but has not yet lodged a legal complaint. Today it called for peaceful protests in Zimbabwe's 10 provinces and asked activists to launch online campaigns and share evidence of voting malpractice. The appeal from the CCC came a day after Mnangagwa said the vote was valid and warned there would be a crackdown on anyone spreading chaos. Reuters says in a ceremony to open a lithium plant, Mnangagwa said, "Whoever shall preach hate speech will be responsible for their hate speech. Our prisons are not full." The Electoral Commission says Mnangagwa secured roughly 53% of the vote to 44% for CCC's leader, Nelson Chamisa. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. A political analyst says Sudan's army chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan's recent departure from the general command of the army in Khartoum and his relocation to the city of Port Sudan, as well as his first trip abroad since the start of the conflict in April, represents a significant shift in Sudan's month-long conflict. Hamdi Hassan, professor of political science at Cairo University, tells Nabil Biagio that these developments show a diplomatic and political settlement to the conflict is possible.
This is a major shift in the course of war since now 4 months is that being trapped inside Khartoum and dedicated both of the two warring generals, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the leader of the regular army, SAF, and Mohammed Hamdan Daglo, the leader of the RSF, the Rapid Support Force. Now, when you are talking to a very complex situation to leave the general command headquarters, using the Navy and the Air Force and going to the Red Sea city of Port Sudan. I think this is very symbolic. That means enhancing the parallel track of the war, which is political relations, looking for a negotiation or finding a peaceful solution for this horrific war. There is a kind of advantage for this side, for the regular army. For sure, Al-Burhan is there. He went to Atbara and then to Port Sudan. Now he can travel abroad. He can manage a kind of support. So I think Egypt is an ally to the army for a long time. So going to Egypt, I think, is very significant. Egypt also in July managed a neighbor country conference summit, and it has its own initiative in order to find a peaceful solution to the conflict in Sudan.
A lot of people see Egypt as the ally of the army and might be interested in supporting the army militarily rather than supporting a peaceful settlement. And we have just seen that Egypt Air will resume direct flights to Port Sudan, where Al-Burhan has relocated from Khartoum. How do you see the role of Egypt here?
You see, Sudan, from the national security Egyptian perspective, is an Egyptian business. So it is very key issue for the national security. The historical bond between Egypt and Sudan, don't mention that you have more than 4 million Sudanese living in Egypt. So all these national interests, we cannot leave it aside and say, no, this is a business for Egypt. So Egypt is keen, and this is the official position of Egypt, about the integrity of the Sudanese state. They don't want the war to spill over and to become like a tribal war, an ethnic war. So when Egypt proposed its initiative in the summit of the neighbors, I think RSF, they accepted that. They didn't deny it. But the problem in Sudan, that the two parties are not prepared for a long stand truce for months. And this is what Egypt is looking for. So if we combine all the other platforms for negotiation, Jeddah platform with Egypt platform, bring Chad in and also United Arab Emirates, I think we can reach solution.
That's Professor of Political Science Hamdi Hassan speaking with my colleague Nabil Biagio from Dubai, the United Arab Emirates. Emergency services teams have left the scene of one of South Africa's deadliest inner city fires, leaving the task of identifying victims to pathologists. They will establish whether the death toll of 74, which includes a dozen children, rises from Thursday's pre-dawn blaze in a derelict downtown apartment building inhabited mainly by homeless and marginalized people, according to the Associated Press Johannesburg Emergency Services spokesperson. Nana Radbi said the burned-out building has been handed over to police and forensic investigators who will conduct their own searches. Johannesburg Mayor Kabilo Gwamanda said the building was believed to have been home to around 200 families. Residents said at least 20 of the dead were from Malawi. More than 50 people were injured, including 6 who were hospitalized in serious condition. President Cyril Ramaphosa, who visited the scene, said the tragedy was partly caused by criminal elements who had taken over the building and were renting out space to homeless people and some foreign migrants. A campaign in Africa to make beans the answer to food insecurity in areas affected by climate change will begin next week with a focus on Kenya. A coalition of proponents will present its roadmap for increased production and consumption of beans and similar foods such as lentils and peas at the Africa Food Systems Forum to be held in Dar es Salaam. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Beans is how the name of a coalition of more than 60 non-profit organizations, companies and research institutes has set its eye on Kenya, pushing for a 100% increase in the consumption of beans and other foods classified as pulses. Jean-Claude Rubiogo is the head of the Pan-African Bean Research Alliance, an organization that pushes for beans as a source of food and income for the continent. He says the first step is to help farmers grow more beans.
I think what is needed is you can double the consumption. First of all, you need to double the production. Because if we don't have enough, like in Kenya, there are many people, almost maybe half, who like to eat beans daily and then even at each meal. But the availability is it's a minimum. So we need to increase the productivity. We need to see how we reduce the cost to the consumer. At the same time, also incentivize the farmer by with the better varieties, better agronomic practices so that they can increase production and productivity.
Climate change has affected bean farming just as it has impacted other crops. Unpredictable weather patterns have made it challenging for farmers to cultivate beans and get good harvests. Experts say low awareness among farmers about utilizing the proper seeds varieties for their specific local conditions has led to reduced yields. The presence of pests and diseases has also played a role in declining bean production. Rubiogo says a reduction of planting and harvesting time can help alleviate the farmers' hunger and poverty.
Because for now we have a variety going up to 65 days, 70 days. 80 days, that is shorter than any other crop, food crop. So you can see when it's short, it allows the farmers to get cash because it reduces the cash hunger period. It also reduces the hunger period in the farms, in the families as well, so that people can get food in short periods, 70 days. Can you imagine? That means you can grow several season here if you invest in water management.
Experts are also working on beans that can take less cooking time, saving families energy and time, despite not producing enough beans. According to the Global Diet Quality Project, half of Kenyans eat pulses daily. Paul Newnham is the head of the Sustainable Development Goal 2 Advocacy Hub, which coordinates the Beans is How campaign.
Beans are something that is you find in all different cultures around the world. So you'll find traditions that have used beans right back from indigenous cultures and all different types of cuisine. Beans are also relatively, compared to many other foods, quite affordable. Beans also are super, super nutritious. So they have not only protein, they have fiber, they have lots of micro and macronutrients. And they also are great for the soil.
Newnham says Beans is How has developed a roadmap to increase the production and consumption of beans.
So the first is to influence and activate a community of bean stakeholders and champions and influencers. And this is bean producers, retail, champions, chefs, young people, social media influencers, to really make beans visible, accessible and desirable. And then at the same time, to build an understanding amongst decision makers as to the value of beans in tackling their policy agenda to ensure and inspire the public to cook, eat and grow more beans.
Beans is how we'll be featured at the Africa Food System Forum due to take place in Tanzania next week. Bean Advocates will host a market stall there, demonstrating ways to cook the food. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyusuhib in Washington.